Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Word is out, they're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler, won't say it twice cause we're already.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 652, A Suicide Squad.
I mean, you know.
I was really curious how he would handle this since he always adds these and takes these away from things. I'm like, but there has been a Suicide Squad, and this is the Suicide Squad.
You gotta work harder than that to trick me, man.
I know. And there it is.
Do you, though?
I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
So I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And we have a guest today joining us from the Epic Film Guys podcast. It's Justin. Hey, Justin. How's it going?
Yeah. I'm doing very, very well. I'm super excited to be here. We're talking about The Suicide Squad, not to be confused with, that's right, Suicide Squad. I know you guys know what I'm talking about, but it appears that a lot of people, normal GA people, are kind of confused about this. I saw someone this morning being like, should I see this movie? Is it a sequel? Is it a remake? Is it a reboot? I'm just like, go see it.
Yes.
Just go see it.
Yeah, to answer the questions, yes,
it's all of those things.
It's so crazy because, you know, we live this stuff and we all know what this is and we've known for years that it's coming out and this and that. And then you look at the box office and people are trying to figure stuff out and it's like, wow, there's still people that are like, what is this? And, you know, it's mind blowing when you're, that's why you have to sometimes step back and think with box office or anything. Like, you live on film Twitter. You live, eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff. And like general audiences, they need a clear picture.
You know, you used to see this kind of stuff all the time in movies.
What do you mean?
Like, okay, there's like five Magnificent Seven.
Oh,
movies,
sure.
Right? And it's like, and then the first one, Yul Brynner's back, but nobody else is. But that's because they mean, spoiler, they all died. but then, like, then Yul Brynner leaves and they bring in like George Kennedy. And like, that's just how it is. Shut your pie hole, America.
Deal with it.
Like, and so, like, people weren't as wrapped up in that stuff back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Nah, it's a different beast now.
We'll get into it.
It is, yeah.
So, before we get into the movie itself, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, TuneIn. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. We call the group League of Show Shares because we're hoping you'll share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week. I have to say, I might have missed some people because the Facebook was not working properly. When I would click on who shared it, it would flash it for a split second and then close it.
Oh.
And so I did my best.
You just do it real quick. You just looked. You're like, I think that's
And, you know, I'm 50. You know, like that's,
you put your readers on.
Yeah, well, I always have my readers on now.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah, it's like they've gone from readers to just glasses.
You need the kind like when people are in, like, especially in a movie where they're inspecting a diamond and they do another one and yeah. another one and another one. Tom's like on the fifth level.
Yeah. So anyway, here are people who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Michael Tonkovic, Ralph Tribble, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Williams, Tammy Sherman Powers, Heather Sachs, aka Jeanette, Colby Mack, Binge Movies. I don't know what I did. I typed here benign movies. Mm. Thanks, autocorrect. But the Movie Journey Podcast, Mike, and Oscar, Ken Holzhauser, Feelin' Film, Kathy Woods, Matt Naglia, Chris Wilson, Invasion of the Remake, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Geek to Me Radio, and In Session Film. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. And finally, don't forget we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. And we just added a new episode there. So,
yes.
So there. I guess there's all that. Let's dig in to A Suicide Squad.
Okay. I enjoyed this movie overall.
All right. Thank you. Well,
I had a good time with it,
Tom.
Thanks for joining us, Justin.
We're
wrapping up.
One of the things that I've realized is that Marvel has figured out the formula, right? So they hire these directors. You bring James Gunn on to do the wacky Guardians of the Galaxy. We've talked about it before.
Sure.
But Kevin Feige has had, I'll use the word stranglehold on that MCU, where those movies are tight and they do what they, you know.
Well, there's a cohesive nature, though they're different genres.
And thus far, hat tip.
Yes.
Right? Like
exactly.
That stranglehold is working.
Has worked.
Yeah.
You know, and
both commercially and creatively. In my opinion.
Yes. Where Warner Brothers has hired, I'm hesitant to use the word auteur, but that's kind of what they were trying to do, right? Like, so we're going to get Zack Snyder and do his version of the DC. We're going to,
so
you know,
here's what happened. They hired Johnny Resnick because they like the Goo Goo Dolls, and they said, do whatever you want. And
right.
Johnny Resnick says, you know, we used to be a metal band.
Yes, you're right.
That's what happened.
Yes.
They got a metal band.
Yes.
They thought they bought Iris.
Right.
And they got Dream Warriors.
Yes. Oh, wow. Well done.
Yeah.
With the Dream Warriors.
Ooh,
yeah.
Baby.
Rocking with Dokken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that wasn't the song they do. I forget what the song they.
There are no,
but Goo Goo Dolls as a metal band,
yes,
did a Nightmare on Elm Street soundtrack.
So I believe you're right.
So this is James Gunn's trauma.
Yeah, like they
trauma.
Yeah, they thought they hired the Marvel guy. They got the trauma guy.
Right, and so much so that the trauma guy is in this movie,
and it's somewhere Toxic Avenger's in the movie because if you read the credits, they cite Toxic Avenger. They
oh, did
in
they
the
really?
Credits. I couldn't find
oh,
it.
Oh, did he really?
But somewhere there's must be a clip or something.
Now I need to see this movie a third time.
If you're a fan of James Gunn and you've seen his filmography and you go all the way back and you see the stuff that he's worked on, you know, for Troma and then even like Slither and Super and that stuff. And you know what kind of filmmaker he is. And then, you know, I think a lot of people are just familiar with Guardians and those are great movies. But what you have to understand is James Gunn has these sensibilities and always has had this type of movie that he
Guardians
loves.
Is the unusual
right
example on his
oh,
resume.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's just
yes.
the one that made all the money.
Right.
And the fact that
it's like if all you know is More Than Words by Extreme, you're going to be in for a rude awakening
if you go to the concert.
Like,
Mr. Big, and you know that one song.
Right.
You're going to be in for a rude awakening.
Then they're going to play Addicted to That Rush, which is my jam.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
Justin, this is not a music podcast, but obviously there is a love for music here. So just
listen,
you are on a movie podcast.
I needed to brush up my history a little bit. I mean, I played in bands for half my life, but I'm a little bit lost here, guys. I'm like,
well,
whoa,
again,
where
I'm
are we
50.
Going?
I'm talking about 80s hair bands right now and metal
Justin's like, am I here to discuss the soundtrack to Suicide Squad?
I won't even lie, I barely paid attention to, so don't even ask.
Okay. But so I love what they did here because we all know James Gunn is a competent filmmaker.
Yeah.
And
oh,
he's made some great films. You know, he set the tone for the MCU. Remember when Guardians came out and then every other movie goes, let's be like Guardians with the humor.
Oh,
we're
funny?
The,
oh,
yeah, yeah. But it's like he really, once Guardians hit, all the movies started to feel like Guardians and it's worked for them commercially. And obviously they still are putting out successful films. And so anyway, you know, he gets let go from Marvel, that whole debacle that we don't have to get back into, and DC snags him up. And what a brilliant move that is. And they say, do your thing. We're hiring James Gunn. He's not a craftsman. They're not saying, well, we have this whole thing and this idea, and you're going to come in because you know how to direct. I mean, no, They said, you come in and you do what you want with these characters, whichever characters. They told him he could use anybody. And as you see, especially the main characters in this movie, you're like, who the hell? What?
Right.
And well, he used anybody.
Yeah. But didn't he say, I want the stupidest characters in the DC universe?
And that's what he got.
He said, I want to find, paraphrasing, like the lamest, silliest characters, but make you care about them. And by God, he makes you care about Ratcatcher 2 and Polka Dot Man.
Not really.
Well,
he attempted to.
Okay. But anyway, well, Joe didn't like it, apparently.
I didn't know. I didn't say that. This is a bloated movie. This does not need to be as long as it is. The idea of the Suicide Squad, and we get this in the first 15 minutes of this movie, is these villains are expendable, right? Like that's,
and they gave it to you.
They did. But I don't need Ratcatcher 2's backstory. I don't need Polka Dot.
I do.
I loved it.
That's totally, I'm with you. I hear you. And
that's the James Gunn heart that he injects into these movies. When they make you care about Yondu, Yondu could have been just another villain. Yondu could have been, the bad guy trying to catch Star-Lord. We talked about it, with Jungle Cruise. I wish Jungle Cruise did more of what Guardians did with, the Guardians are doing this thing. There's a big bad, but also Yondu wants to get Star-Lord back. You know, the multiple chases going on. But by God, by Guardians 2 especially.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they made you care about Yondu, who did not, you didn't need to care about him. You could say the same thing about Yondu.
But you had Idris Elba, you had John Cena, you had Margot Robbie, right? So those are, to me, those are your three people that were, and King Shark, and voiced by Sylvester Stallone.
Is he not doing the mocap? I was curious.
I bet he's not.
Probably not.
I bet he's
not. I didn't see any pictures of him on the set, so I don't think so.
No, there's on the set photos, I didn't know who he was, but they took a picture and Sean Gunn's in there and the guy doing King Shark in a big suit that's built up and everything. It's not,
So when they add Ratcatcher 2, who is just again.
They should have got Carl Weathers to do the mocap.
Yeah, sign me up. That'd be great. When they add when your core team shows up, and Rick Flagg, who I got to say, I went back and watched clips of Joel Kinnaman in the first one. Yeah,
he's 100% better.
He has a completely different accent. Well, even his cadence and everything is different in that. Crazy how but it is. This is a sequel to that movie.
But it's not.
You bring back the same actors playing the same character. This is a sequel to that movie.
No, I think that we could probably, if we wanted to waste time on it, we could delve into easily 10, 20 different movies that different actors come in and play the same character.
But it's the same actor playing the same character. It's Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, Jay Courtney as Boomerang.
What is Evil Dead 2?
What is Batman Returns? I mean, think of it this way. That's not a sequel.
Whoa. What do you mean Batman Returns isn't a sequel?
You better listen to Justin. Justin is a Batman expert.
It's not a sequel.
How do you figure?
Based on what Tim Burton has said, based on the script, based on watching the actual movie, it's just another telling of these characters in this world.
Exactly.
That's the same way I'm looking at the Suicide
Squad.
These are comic books.
You can tell, there are storylines in comic books that don't have anything to do. I mean, obviously, this. I'm not trying to educate you. But from my point of view, you can make a new story and you can even introduce, let's in this universe use the Joker, for instance. What's his origin? There doesn't have to be a through line just because you're using the same character in the same universe. And to me, this movie is not a sequel. James Gunn said he didn't even watch the first movie. So how could he, how could he, the writer and director, how can the writer and director make what you call a sequel if he never watched the first movie? He wrote the thing. So it's not. He just used some of the same actors. He can't. He doesn't know what happened. You know what I mean? You can't.
But if I hear you. Okay.
Yeah, but you can argue whatever you want to technically call it. But my point is that the character can act and talk different because James Gunn, they said, hey, we want to have some of the same actors. They're good, whatever. We already have a Rick Flagg. People liked him. Okay, or whatever. Use Joel Kinnaman. But he didn't say you have to. He didn't go, I better see how he talks and I better look at his outfits.
That's fair. But because I will say that this movie is definitely closer to the John Ostrander Suicide Squad comic. This is a love letter to that book. It's basically the same team. The team is hit or miss, but it's pretty much the same team. Characters are wearing the guy who the bearded guy in the control room in the comic books, that character exists, and he is like the warden of Belle Reve.
Oh, okay.
Or the gal that hits Amanda Waller with the mallet is also a character in the comics as well.
Yeah.
Like, so though, it's like this, this is very much a love letter to the original, not the original one, because that's a different thing, but like the one that you know of the Suicide Squad. This is like a nice little callback to
and
that.
And James Gunn's a comic book guy. So
yeah,
I think
yeah.
this is the difference you get where I feel like when you're, I want to invoke this name without a bunch of crisis going down here, but when you get Zack Snyder, who I like as a filmmaker in general, you know, for his past efforts, but when you get Zack Snyder in and he brushes up on some comics or gets David Goyer or whoever, you know, I mean, when you're a director and a writer and you're forming a vision and you have to do the research, it's different than a guy who James Gunn grew
up. He has
up
a passion for the medium.
With
right.
comics.
And he's like roughly the same age I am. So like these were the books that were coming out
absolutely.
When I was 19, 20, 21 years old.
Yeah. And it shows when you understand the comics. Like I don't think that when James Gunn takes these characters, he has a deep knowledge and his, you know, he knows the history of the characters.
Oh, sure, sure.
And so he treats them a certain way. And especially like some people I read online are like mad that members of the Suicide Squad were killed. And I'm like, to your point, like
why?
Like, that is dumb. It's in the title
they see it as being killed for the shock value, and it's like they don't understand what the Suicide Squad
is.
But
they were killed for the shock value. That's
the point.
That's the premise.
That's what exactly. So that's what I'm saying.
Like, I'd like this porn, but we need less. Like what?
Like, so I know. So that's the thing. But I think a lot of those people also are very mad at WB. So it's hard to kind of you have to.
It's so that argument. Like I was just having this conversation with Tom earlier, where it's just like I don't have that like in me to be angry at WB because you know, like if anybody should be angry, it should be me, right? Like they have destroyed my favorite character, and I don't know if we'll ever get that character back. Right. Like the Superman that we have had since 2013 is not my character. Right?
I can see Justin seething with rage.
It's
over
which
there.
Is like I
I'm
totally
so used to hearing this.
I know.
Like,
if you are into that version of the character, that's great. That's not.
And
Superman.
I'm joking. Justin is not over there seething. But I mean,
no, I mean, it's just only tattooed right here on my skin. I mean, but no, for sure. I mean, like, I totally understand that. I mean, for me, I like more than one interpretation of a character, even if they kind of walk the fine line. If it is the purest version or not, but I'm open to interpretation regardless. So I get it, though.
I think the difference is that, like, when they do, like, different interpretations in the comic books, you have generations of Superman stories. You have many different iterations of Superman stories that go down different, whether it's Red Sun or whatever.
If one doesn't work, you're like, okay.
Yeah,
and you move to the next.
But there's so few, like, film versions that, like, and it's kind of the struggle we always have with DC when they, you know, they haven't earned the right yet. Like, get it right in the first version, and then you can start playing around the edges. Like, now that Marvel's going to be like, well, you know, maybe someone else gets to be Black Panther, or we could have three Captain Americas. Like, okay, but you don't start then.
Yeah,
right. That's not your starting point.
Right.
They hadn't earned that. But 12, 15 years in on an amazing run, they've earned the right to play with that, or like with What If coming up.
Yeah.
If they had started with What If, it'd be like, who gives a crap?
You can't do What if you don't even know what is.
Yeah.
No,
the,
totally.
The whole
That's profound.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Kevin, quote Kevin Brackett.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. They've earned it. And I, after watching this movie, and I am not saying every single movie needs to be the Suicide Squad
well,
in
that,
DC.
This is my fear now.
This, well, I know, but see, when Christopher Nolan...
But you can't blame this movie for that.
No, absolutely not.
But when Christopher Nolan made The Dark Knight, every movie became The Dark Knight.
Right.
And that's a Batman thing. The Dark Knight is perfect for Batman.
For Batman.
And so every movie can't be the Suicide Squad. But James Gunn is a good enough filmmaker, and he has proven himself with Guardians, with this film now, where I hope they consider him to be the next Feige and get DC back on track.
Yeah, it
sounds
not,
like it.
It would not surprise me.
They've already, I mean,
they bring him in basically as their showrunner. Yeah.
I mean, this movie wasn't even released, and they're like, yeah, do a whole series with John Cena based on just what we've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, so I really, really hope that they don't, hopefully, I mean, it's new management.
That is my fear, right? To your point, is because The Dark Knight smashed, like, everything, with the exception of Iron Man, like, smashed everything, right? Like, so they doubled down on that tone. So my fear is that this James Gunn tone, which I don't think any other filmmakers can capture.
But I get your fear, maybe. But I would argue, I think James Gunn, especially now, is mature enough to know that not every story needs that tone.
Because he gets comics.
He wouldn't make a Superman movie like this. He might have Superman pop up in a movie like this for a gag, you know.
Which honestly, at the end of this movie, I thought that's what we were going to get.
Yes, if they don't know who is going to be their Superman, so they can't.
I guess that's true.
You know, but because they're in such disarray.
Right.
But, you know, comic book nerd moment, my disappointment with Suicide Squad, there's such an obvious character to put in Suicide Squad. Well, an obvious unknown character, which is what he wants, right?
Who's that?
Resurrection Man.
I mean, that would be brilliant.
Like, you put a Resurrection Man in Suicide Squad because he can't die.
Right.
And that has my single favorite comic book moment is in the Resurrection Man series. And I think, he crossed over with Hitman, the Garth Ennis
one. Yeah, so it could have been Garth Ennis.
And I'm pretty sure Garth Ennis wrote it, where they're...
John McCrae, I think was the artist.
You told us about this one time.
They're trapped in a gunfight, like behind a bar or something, and Hitman turns to Resurrection Man, and the Resurrection Man's gimmick is every time he dies, he comes back to life, but he comes back with a different power.
Right.
And Hitman's like, what do you got? And he's like, what's your power right now? And he's like, I can turn invisible. He's like, we have no need for that. Boom. Shoots him right in the head. And then he's like, he comes back. He's like, what do you got now? And he's like, I can shoot flowers out of my... Nope. Boom. And like, there's like a whole page.
Yes. It's like
of
a panel after
panel. Panel after panel after panel of him just killing him. And then finally he's like, I can shoot lasers out of my eyes. That we can use.
That's a great gag. That is really good.
While we were watching this the first time, because I had to watch this twice, because I'm sitting with your buddies and we were talking the entire time.
What happened?
I was sitting with my buddies and we were watching it, but we don't, you know.
You should have just recorded it.
I know, we should have. Here, take this. Yeah. Is Guy Gardner. Like Guy Gardner to me is, if they're going to do a Green Lantern, that is the Guy Gardner. That is the Green Lantern you put with James Gunn. Yeah. Is that version of
I
the
told
Green
Katie
Lantern.
That yesterday. I said she was talking about Green Lantern movies, you know, maybe we'll do that. I'm like, James Gunn's Green Lantern. That's what I
don't know about that, but at least give him the Guy Gardner, because there's so many Green Lanterns.
But I still think it comes back to, they haven't earned it. They got to do Green Lantern right before they can give you the goofy
true,
Green.
True.
Like this. So, but we should talk about the movie itself.
Yeah. We should. So, it's a pretty simple plot for the most part. We are reintroduced to a version of the Suicide Squad. It's a little bit the same, but it's a little bit different. You've got, like we said, Jai Courtney comes back as Captain Boomerang. But then you've got like Pete Davidson, and you've got Nathan Fillion as TDK, who is a new character for this movie. I had to do some serious research because I was like, who the hell is this guy?
I mean, but that's what everyone says, and Harley asks the question for you. That's what's great. Everyone's like, who TDK? What does that stand for?
Javelin, you've got the Weasel. So you've got this really a hodgepodge of... Yeah. Villains, and of course they walk on the beach. Michael Rooker, that's how this movie opens, is Michael Rooker.
I liked this. I liked that they gave you an audience surrogate to follow, even though you knew he wasn't going to be the main character, but everything is shown from Michael Rooker's perspective.
Right.
And so you get to see how they enlist one of these villains, what they go through. They give you the exposition dump through them saying, well, we're going to take 10 years off your...
Which is much better than what they did in the first one.
But it's quick. I mean, he does what? He does the exposition drop in
10 minutes? 5 minutes?
In 2 minutes.
It's pretty quick.
So we're introduced to Rick Flagg, Joel Kinnaman's character, and we don't know what the mission is, but they are storming a beach, basically. And we find out that Pete Davidson has sold them all out. And within 5 minutes, Pete Davidson's face is all over the screen. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm not even kidding. Like, James Gunn, given the opportunity to do a rated R movie, took complete advantage of it.
Which was one of his stipulations. He said, if I do this for you, it's going to be rated R. And, you know, he got to make the movie that he wanted. And that's apparent.
Yes. Yeah. So what happens here is this Suicide Squad, this team... is demolished.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not even kidding. And from Mongal, gets blown up in a helicopter fire. We do lose Jay Courtney as Captain Boomerang.
Who what about Jai Courtney?
Is that what it is, Jai or Jay?
I think so.
Thank God.
Well, he was not, I mean, we didn't really get enough of him in
Wait,
this
Wait, are
movie,
you happy
but...
about him correcting the pronunciation or the character being killed?
No, I'm just glad that I got to see him brutally murdered on yeah. screen. No, actually, fair. I'll be straight up. I've always been a detractor for that man in general and anything that he's in, even though in the previous Suicide Squad, I was like, all right, he's not that bad. But here I was like, okay, cool, kill him off. Yeah.
Well, awesome. The problem was he didn't throw a boomerang in the first movie.
He threw a bunch in this one. Yeah.
Remember that? Like, yeah. He threw a boomerang like half a time in the first movie.
Was that the one where he had like the thing with the pink unicorn? Wasn't
oh,
that?
I don't know. Was that?
I think that, yes. I'm almost positive.
I think so. Yeah, that okay. character is pretty bad.
Which is crazy because he's a pretty good Flash villain.
Yeah,
like
but
in the comics,
I know,
like,
I know.
Pretty good
in these movies, he's like, yeah. Yeah, we're killing him off. But James Gunn, during this entire movie, pulls the rug out from under you, and I really like it because,
no,
one,
I was totally on board
with it. Sets
it.
The tone, yeah. And it tells you, and it's not a just for shock value, like we all said. It's what they do in these comics.
Right.
But he sets the tone for you from the beginning. He shows you that no one's safe, and he follows that rule up until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he kind of subverts those expectations and gets you right into it. And come to find out, there's two teams. And I thought,
yes,
he does
second,
that a couple times in this
team.
Movie, where you're just like, holy crap, where you think one thing. Like, yeah. I knew these characters were going to die. Of course, they were going to.
You knew,
I didn't,
you knew that Margot. So to me, there are certainly actors in this movie where, like, you're not killing that person. Right?
It's Margot Robbie.
It's Margot Robbie is the only
That's
one
the,
where I was like, she'll be fine.
Right. Yeah. You know that she is. So
I figured Idris Elba, John Cena were safe as
well. Well, I figured John Cena was safe because of the show.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I easily
I didn't know
thought
that
would be
I didn't know he had a show, okay. But I figured they don't bring in a name like that for one movie.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anymore.
Like, the show could have been a prequel, which was my thought.
That's what I was thinking as well, yeah.
When you see this movie and you wonder what else is Amanda Waller made him do.
Do you know who he is? Who his character is?
Who?
He's the comedian.
What do you mean?
So when DC bought Charlton Comics, they had the Blue Beetle, they had Rorschach, but had the Question, and they had Peacemaker, and they had these different characters.
Yeah.
And then Alan Moore pitched the idea of Watchmen, and he was like, let me use those Charlton characters that you just have sitting off to the side. And DC
said no.
And DC was like, no. He was like, cool. So he took Peacemaker and turned him into the comedian.
Right. That's cool. So I love this setup. And I mean, there was some hilarious stuff in here. TDK with his hands flailing.
That was
and all the
I
guards
really
going,
enjoyed
what?
That. Like, what are you doing? Just shooting, like loading up his arms with
but
bullets.
And then you see them all get destroyed, right?
Yes.
They're shooting the hands and he's bleeding. Blood's coming out of his mouth and people's heads. I mean, the boomerang, to his credit, like he's
slicing
chopping head, slice,
heads. Yeah.
Slicing.
Michael Rooker has a moment of PTSD and says, nope.
Yeah.
And starts to swim away. And of course, Amanda Waller says, I'm going to blow your brains out. And she does, like, blows his brains out.
She slipknotted him.
She did.
Remember?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right. I knew that there was a character that
they
didn't
did.
Make
that's
it.
the one time I can really remember they pulled the rug out from under you where they killed someone off that quickly. And then you're like, oh, that's a cool character.
And then boop, gone.
Yeah.
So then we flash to the other side of the beach and we see our main characters. it's Idris Elba, King Shark, who is, like I said, Sylvester Stallone. Polka Dot Man, who I gotta tell you, that actor must have the record for most appearances in superhero stuff without being the same character.
I was thinking if it was Sean Gunn, but I know that's kind
it
of
has
a fine
to be,
line to
so
walk.
He was in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
He
like
was
police
in,
officer.
Yeah, he was in Gotham.
He was in the Flash show as well, right?
He was in the Flash show as well, that's okay. correct. He was the voice of Calendar Man in Batman The Long Halloween, which is the new animated feature that just came out. And this. And I think there was another one, but I don't like. But he has been in more superhero stuff, DC related superhero stuff, without being the same character.
He's good in everything he's in too. I really like
Ant-Man.
Isn't he like the Russian guy? And he has some kind of strong accent. Yeah, but he's a really good actor. You know, he has a distinctive look, right?
Yeah.
Like you cast him, and he definitely stands out. And like he always, I mean, he plays different characters in all the stuff he does. Like he's really.
He's not doing the same thing over
he's not,
and over.
He's
again.
Not just like, let's cast him because he's got a distinctive look. Like, he really does put on a different performance, and I like him. And I liked him in this a lot. I think a lot of heart and humor came from this role. And again, another character where you're just like, I mean, they're so meta in this to where the audience is asking, what do? Polka Dot Man, you throw polka dots?
Yeah.
He's like,
right?
Yeah, I do.
And John Cena asks that when they recruit him and they list him in the beginning. It's like, he
actually throws polka dots? All right. I do think it's interesting that with Bloodspot, Bloodsport. Yeah. He's basically Deadshot.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the exact same character arc for him, right? Like, he's got...
Oh, with the daughter.
With the daughter. Yeah. He doesn't want to join the team. Like,
I always have to stop and remember which is which. Yeah. Even in the comic books. Because their costumes even kind of look so similar. Like,
very similar.
Yeah. It's Superman number 4.
But so James Gunn was smart. Like, Will Smith didn't want to... I mean, I don't really know. It's not like I was there for the negotiations.
He could
but,
not have had an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, from my understanding is after that first movie, Will Smith was not interested in coming back. And so James Gunn finds a character that can fill that position, right? A similar character.
So here's the thing, is I don't even think he's a similar character because he's not a big enough name to have that kind of story arc. I feel like this was written for Deadshot. And Will Smith was like, I'm not coming back. And he was like, well, what's another character that can shoot really well? We'll just throw the same story with him.
But honestly, why not just recast it? Who cares?
I agree with you. Like, Idris Elba as Deadshot would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But and also this character, this portrayal is 100 times better than Will Smith.
This is what we have been talking about with Idris Elba, right? Like we have said before,
give this the right role,
something to do, because he has been doing the wrong stuff.
Yeah,
this is the Idris Elba that is like dope. Like this is the one that should be James Bond. This is the dude that I love.
But look at what that has to say about the writer and director. I mean, I know it's the same person in this movie, but. Again, Polka Dot Man, Ratcatcher 2, Rick Flagg. I mean, not saying you could never like him with anyone else, but I mean, look at what they did in the original and look at how Rick Flagg is such a better character, better written, better acted by the same actor. Like, that's the cool thing is you see the same person and James Gunn wrote it and said, you do it this way. And it's like those instincts are right.
This is the best John Cena's been.
Hands down the best.
This is the best he's been since he's jumped to the... Well, I take that back. He was funny in like... What was the...
Cockblockers. He was good in
Cockblockers.
Trainwrecked,
funny.
Right?
Trainwrecked.
He wasn't bad in that.
It was like one... It's like that, pretty small role.
That's I know he's like 5 minutes, but...
I call that a cameo, but you know what I mean? Like, that's...
Yeah, you're right, but...
He was great in Trainwrecked, but that was because... It was so playing against type. Like, it was the shock of seeing him, and he did great in that role. But as far as, like, acting, right? So not we're just casting John Cena to be John Cena because it's funny.
We need him because we can't get The Rock.
But
no,
I mean,
no, that's, like, the Fast and Furious problem.
Right,
like, we can't get The Rock, so we'll get the other guy, I guess.
So, yeah, John Cena, hands down. So, but you see what they did with these characters, and they really worked. And even actors that you don't necessarily like and other stuff, you're just like, this is it. This works.
No.
But Idris Elba, hands down, yes, this is... He owns this role, and it's his performance. Yeah. It was cool. He was likable. He got to do the dramatic stuff, right, with the daughter, and the funny stuff with the daughter, right? In the beginning when they're yelling at each other, no, F you, like that's hilarious.
No,
right?
No, I
like,
thought I think he is. This is the guy that we have always known exists, but he didn't have the right stuff. So they go. Both these teams are tasked with going to Corto Maltese. To do something, but nobody really knows what they're doing there except for one person, and we'll find out who that person is later. In the process, Rick Flagg is captured, Harley Quinn is captured.
Quote unquote captured.
Well, I think.
No, he runs away. And then
Flagg does?
Yeah, because he gets away. He's
you're right.
Are blocked, and he's like, Waller, Waller, and he's run through the jungle, and we find out.
That's right.
Which I think
that's the best sequence of the movie.
That may be one of my favorite scenes in the movie, too.
Definitely my favorite action sequence in the movie, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is hilarious, and the subverting your expectations.
It is a great action. It is a perfectly filmed action sequence, and then the reveal at the end where they're just like, oh,
yeah,
sorry.
I don't know if James Gunn is a huge fan of Commando, but it is literally... Commando and Predator all in one. Coming out of the bushes and just blowing dudes away.
I'm sure he is. Like, knowing James Gunn's sensibilities, I bet you he is. Like, this is the stuff he grew up with. You know, those action movies. And
also written by Jeff Loeb, who was the executive vice president of Marvel Animation, and he wrote some great
and
comic
DC,
books.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote some good Batman stuff. Yeah. So they...
So anyway, Team A is killed off.
Gone.
Everybody
with the exception of Rick Flagg and Harley Quinn.
Yeah. And we get Harley Quinn is now going to carry Javelin.
I don't know why I'm doing it, but...
which I think is hilarious that, like, Chekhov's Javelin, that they planted it. And the way that she's in the dark as well. Again, like, this movie has a very meta feel to it, to where he really knows how to give you these audience surrogates, to where, like... The audience is going to be asking these exact questions, and these characters ask those exact questions, right? Some movies we, you know, with lesser writing, we go like, all they had to do was give it a line, right?
Right.
Like this is stupid, or why didn't they just whatever? And James Gunn thinks those things out to where he's like, yeah, I'm going to give it this line.
Right.
And so she's now carrying this javelin that, I mean, and that's another.
And people ask her, like, what are you doing with that? She's like, I don't know.
I'm waiting for a message from God. Jesus Christ. Or him. or any of them. I mean.
That's the other thing is, and we've talked about it before, is the evolution of that character from the first time we see her. In the first Suicide Squad, where she's over-sexualized and she's wearing very small stuff clothing, and she's got, you know, the tattoos on her face, which apparently they took out a tattoo on this because she did not like it to begin with, to the Birds of Prey, which is like a very, you know, the and now we're here.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with them making Harley a hero. Because she's not a hero.
Like, they've been trying to make her a hero for the last 10 years.
I get it.
What they do.
She is not a hero.
She's not. She's an anti-villain.
She's a villain.
Well, no, but when she's working in this case, she's an anti-villain.
What they have done in the comics and these movies is they have tried to rehabilitate.
And the TV show.
What TV show? Oh, the Harley Quinn TV show.
Harley Quinn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They have tried to rehabilitate her to being their version of Deadpool. Mm-hmm. That's what they've tried to do. They put her on, you know, Deadpool, you put Deadpool on a cover, he sells an extra 500 issues or whatever. Harley's the same way.
But so, tell me, I mean, again, Gunn gives you the scene with the president of, you know, the new president of Corto Maltese, where she's not a good guy, right? Like, she straight up murders someone because he says he's going to do something bad. That's like the textbook definition.
In cold blood. Cold-blooded murder,
yeah,
too.
That's an anti-hero. You know what I mean? Like, I think the way he presented her, he shows you she's still not ever going to be a good guy, but she's, in that case, she probably...
But she's a bad guy you can't help but love.
She's
that's the way
using her
at.
Bad guy tendencies to kill off badder guys.
Remember, it's like in the mob movies. This is a terrible person, but he's getting the mobsters, right?
Yeah, but she has... Yeah. She has owned that character. She will she will probably be DC's version of Hugh Jackman. I don't think that she's going to go anywhere.
She's going to get that buff?
I mean, if she can, she could do it. It's fine. But I don't think, I think she's going to be this character for the long haul. She is not, they're not going to recast this character. She is going to be Harley from here on out until she says, I'm going to call it a day.
Yeah, it's definitely her role until she doesn't want it anymore. Yeah.
Now, Justin, so I know you're a Jared Leto Joker guy, right? You like that?
I'm slightly apologetic for his performance. So, I think a lot of it had a lot to do with meddling and wasn't really his fault. I mean, it's not his fault either that he came off as a second rate Jim Carrey Riddler in that movie either.
I think Jared Leto is a good actor. So when he's not up to his shenanigans, I mean, we've seen him be a great actor. So I think direction and writing, I agree, has a lot to do with that. But I was curious about, since you are more of a fan of that interpretation, and then of course that relationship with Harley is kind of center stage in that movie. Like, what did you think of Harley's representation here?
I loved it, actually. I mean, I've been up for, like I said earlier on, like, I don't mind when they slightly alter what came before it, in a way. Like, I knew they were going to go a different route with her just based on watching the trailer. The one time that I watched the trailer, by the way, which is very unlike me going into this thing, I had very low expectations in every possible way. I just wanted to enjoy it. But going back to, like, that relationship, I'm not one of the proponents of the whole release the air cut, though I'd love to see it. I just wish that we got to see their relationship and those characters fully realized the way that they were intended from the original vision. Whether people like that version of those characters or not, or whether they're, you know, their version. But I really liked what they did with her here. She was the same Harley, just a little more upbeat.
Yeah, I really like the way they portrayed the character too. And, you know, I think they showed you how smart she was as far
that
as
is
the
true.
Stuff that, you know, because remember, she's a psychologist.
Right.
Like, she is not a stupid person. And yeah, she's silly and a lot of things are played up for laughs. But this movie keeps reminding you, like, no, she is.
She's always, whether you no matter how crazy you think she is, she's always kind of one step ahead of everybody. And they just dismiss her because she's this crazy, you know, she's crazy Harley Quinn.
She's a girl.
She's also a girl and she can't defend herself.
Yeah. And that scene, the Harley scene when she breaks out,
She's hanging there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
all
awesome.
Her.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah. No, she grabs him by the throat and pulls him up, man. Yeah. Oh,
that's
like,
all her.
That's some legs.
She's actually
right
going
there.
Upside down and bending. Because the way they shot it, you don't see her face. I thought that has to be.
There's a reason. James, they had said in an interview, he was like, she did everything, and then we went back and watched the dailies. Her hands were in front of her face, so you can't see her face. And it was the only shot we got.
That's
impressive. So, and that's all her. That whole scene of her hanging there is all her doing all of that. That whole stunt thing is her.
Wow, that's awesome.
But James Gunn was like, I could not believe that we didn't get like the... Her arm.
I know, right? Because it was
completely by accident.
So in that scene, James Gunn gets his Old Boy homage.
He does. Yes.
The sideways hallway when she's going down with the javelin, and that's a badass action.
It's
sequence.
A good scene, and it's a nice callback to Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
In that police department scene where she's shooting people with the bean bags, and it's like exploding with flowers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like that because in this, like, so you saw it in all the trailers and the marketing material that Harley's going crazy with some guns, and you see flowers behind her, and you're like, what the hell is going on? But what I love is that the chaos of Harley is represented in her mind by flowers, and birds are flying around. She's at peace. This is her happy place, and she's gunning down bad guys with machine guns.
Yes,
like
that, mowing them down.
I like how he presented that, that was her happy place.
Right,
how, you know, Harley obviously has been tortured and manipulated and everything, and it shows her psyche is.
It always drives me crazy when people are just like, oh, Harley and Joker, it's this relationship. Was like,
it's bad. Totally missed
it. You missed right.
It is all bad. Yeah. He tortured that poor woman.
It'd be so nice if Ike and Tina Turner could get back together. I mean, I know he's dead, but.
Broke her brain and then. Yeah. But yeah, and so that's the scene you get in the trailer where Flag and Idris Elba are just like, we're going to break out Harley, and she's already gotten herself out. And she's like, I can go back in if you want. And he's like, no, it's fine.
I like how she tears up.
Yeah. Like, oh, you came back for me. That's so sweet.
What I mean. Like, and that also shows you like how emotionally tortured she is and how she's still trying to deal with all this stuff. Like, someone actually cares about me. She's been so destroyed by her relationship with the Joker that she realizes never actually cared about her. And now you see you've got these people that she just met. Basically, and
well, she knows. I mean, they definitely allude to the fact that her and Flag know each other.
Like, I took it as she liked him because she just.
I mean, that was a pretty long hug, man.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Like, I took it as
a history there
that there was
the
a backstory. Okay, there as
and
well.
in one of the, I'm trying to think of which version they are a couple. Like, well, they become a couple.
And I think it's
comics.
Because, like, you know, when she shows up the first time, you know, it's like, I think, like, she's done this before with the Suicide Squad. That's probably what it is.
Could
she's
be.
Been in previous
or
missions.
They're referencing the older movie.
Could be, because that's just another mission. Like in another comic.
So we find out that Peter Capaldi is in this movie as the Thinker.
Yeah.
And he has somehow managed to wrangle Starro, which... I didn't watch the second trailer. I didn't know this character was in this.
I didn't know this was the.
And when they reveal, we've reached the point at DC where Starro is in a movie, and it's a comic accurate version of the character. Like, it's the exact, you know, and it is. That's the other thing I wanted to mention is the CG in this is impressive.
Yeah,
like, it's a really good looking movie. King Shark looks great.
King Shark is another character where you're just like, how the hell are they going to do King Shark? I mean, we've
seen him before. He's been on Flash.
I love the Flash, but, you know, the CG and the Flash
is
not
TV show.
But the CG and the Flash is not the strong suit. I love the show. It's just you. It's like, you know, my wife used to always watch that. What was that ABC show? But the fairy tales, the Disney.
Once upon a time. My kid loves that show.
Yeah. Well, she always.
So I only know from that.
No, but she always.
No. It's okay. You could say that you like it.
Problem.
I'm not gonna. It's all right.
So she would always.
All right.
She would watch that, and I would watch it with her sometimes, and I would be like, "Oh my god, the special effects are like PlayStation 1 video game cutscene quality, right?" And she's like, "That's the charm of it, you know." So
it's the charm of it. That's the excuse.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's kind of the Flash, though. You watch the Flash for the heart, the actors.
Yeah.
They're so well cast and everything, and the characters, and it's silly, but it's
congratulations to Supergirl, which has wrapped up its series.
Is that done now?
Supergirl's done. Six seasons. Like, that's okay. Pretty good for TV.
So anyway, this movie, though, when you're like, King Shark, how are they going to do that? And there are moments where you actually feel like you have feelings about King Shark, and it you're sad when he says he has no friends, and you're happy when he thinks he finds friends. And like, how did they do that with this big ridiculous monster? And I mean, it's the writing,
yeah,
and the CG is actually good enough. To
and,
where
and the performance, yeah, the performance yeah. definitely for me stood out a lot. And the eyes, the way that he emoted with his eyes. There's the scene where he's hidden in the back of the bus,
yes.
and they're on this mission, and he's kind of covered with like a blanket, and you just see the sadness in his eyes of him just sitting there, no dialogue, nothing. Yes. It's just a quiet moment, and I'm like, I'm feeling for a giant shark. And that's why this movie is succeeding.
100% exactly. I think that's like that's just a great way to sum it up about this movie. Is you get characters like the Polka Dot Man and Ratcatcher 2 and King Shark, and Gunn makes you feel because the way they're written, and that's the heart that you don't get in the first Suicide Squad.
No, there's the first Suicide Squad movie is just, I mean, you can go back to whatever episode number that is. It's devoid of everything.
Right. And you don't care about any characters. So I know that a lot of them are expendable, but the characters that make it, you want to at least feel like there's some stakes and then be happy when they survive. Right. And so he does it with these characters. And I think the King Shark stuff worked. I think all the other lesser tier and like this movie, like we said in the beginning, most of the characters that you know or were expecting to be in the movie are killed off.
Immediately.
They kill off the names. You know, like Pete Davidson, not saying he's a brilliant actor, but Nathan Fillion, Pete Davidson.
That's really Michael Rooker.
Flula Borg.
Who's that?
Chaplin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He's just a funny character. I'm like, I would have liked to have seen his antics throughout the entire movie. Like, he's funny, right? So, but they kill him off and Rooker, right? Which, you know, so and who does he play?
So he is a character.
Savant, right?
But he's a Batman villain. He's like a C-list Batman villain.
I love Batman, but I'm not familiar with that character at all. Okay.
Yeah. I
don't know him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Batman guy.
The only reason I know him is because, like, I watched a quick video and, like, what issues were these people in?
What time frame is he from?
So, like, the Breyfogle, Alan Grant.
Okay, I read
around
all those.
Around there, I think.
Yeah.
He just must have shown up so randomly at one point.
But,
and
like, Mongal is a character from, like, more recent Superman comics. Like, she's the daughter of Mongol.
Okay.
But, yeah, so, like, they think that the reason they're there is to get Starro for the U.S. government. Turns out that's not the case.
U.S. government
may have
stuff.
Been doing some bad stuff, and there are hard drives, which I think is the way when the gal, when whoever reaches in and grabs that hard drive, I was like, well, that was easy.
Well,
like,
that was flag.
It was like an open thing. He just pulls out a hard drive. I was like, well, that was simple.
I mean, that's how hard drives are docked in bays. They're not in wires.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're actually pushed in, and you do just pull
them
out.
Like, he just reached in. I was like, I got it.
Like, how do you know exactly where?
That's what I thought.
It's a huge computer bank. He's like, this one.
No, I mean, to locate it in the server bank, yes. And would it all be on one hard drive? It's going to sound really nerdy, but when you have a server set up with a lot of computers,
let's not get nerdy in our comic book movie.
Well, and this is like, obviously I love the movie. This has nothing to do with my enjoyment, but when you have hard drives in a server, they have what's called a RAID configuration. And so if one drive fails, you can pull the data that was on that drive from little bits that are split up between other drives.
Gotcha.
So
it's
like
not really that simple.
So it's not 100% probably on that drive.
Fetch the MacGuffin.
I know. Yeah. That's for the like two listeners out there that have, you know. But what I like about this is on second watch, when you watch the video and Amanda Waller and that, again, hilarious scene where she's briefing everyone and they're asking the stupid questions. But she shows you the video footage of them finding Starro.
Do you see that it's
whoever,
Americans?
Yeah. The American, he never hit it.
Okay.
You just weren't like paying attention. And they even say it. They say Americans found it. So like he's setting it up and showing you that the Americans found Starro. Now, why you would think that they didn't continue to be involved? Like, well, if the Americans found it, why would they just hand it off to someone else?
Yeah.
Right. So he shows you and you don't think about it again. And then they show you again. They're like, yeah, like we said, Americans found it.
Well, I think once we see you're right. You're totally right now that you said that. But I don't think that we knew the torture. And so when the squad walks through, or when Rick Flagg walks through that corridor, and there's all of these citizens that have the stars on their face.
Man.
And that's the big deal, is like Starro is this symbiotic starfish, basically. What is that, like the slang for a butthole?
That was my favorite part of the whole movie.
Because that was
the first thing I thought, too. And he's like, it's slang for butthole. Do you think that means anything?
She's just
and
like,
she turns to me,
no.
Goes, no. Okay, can we talk about...
Every hot dog flavored water?
Yeah. Okay.
Can we talk about Viola Davis in this movie?
So she, again...
It's Viola Davis, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
Is the actor? Yeah. I want to make sure.
Because Angela Bassett actually played this character on the TV show.
Oh, really?
I think she's Waller on like The Flash.
Okay, but we have to talk about how good she is as Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
And she was good in the first
movie.
She's
always been good.
No, and she's a great actress. But what I mean, though, is that this character is a horrible despicable, just awful person who will do anything to win.
The character that hits her in the head is a character that she's a major character in the Ostrander comic.
Yeah.
She dies in the comics, and that actually makes Amanda Waller kind of lighten up a little bit. So her character between those two, like, it's interesting. You're not going to go, I don't think you're going to see that character going forward, but like, there's a relationship between those two, and it makes Amanda Waller not be as
interesting
mean.
But she is terrifying in this movie, right?
Yeah.
When you see the anger in her eyes, even before she's yelling toward the end of the movie in the final act, like when you just see her looking at the other teammates of hers, when you see her about to flip the switch and press it on Michael Rooker, I mean, she is terrifying. And
yeah, in terms of intimidation, I think she's probably the scariest character in the movie.
You're totally right. 100%. And she is phenomenal. So kudos to her and her acting. And I'm so glad they kept her in this role.
We're not going to talk about Marvel because they've figured out their casting. DC has done a pretty good job of getting their casting. Maybe not the best actors for said roles, but as far as looks wise, they're pretty spot on. Viola Davis as Amanda Waller is J. Jonah Jameson, J.K. Simmons level perfection.
Yeah, she looks off the page.
Amanda Waller is definitely she's a beefier character, but as far as tone and everything, she is spot on, just right off
exactly.
the page.
Exactly. That's a good comparison. So the big thing is Harley gets captured, like we said, and this new president that basically the old president was fine.
His dad, wasn't it?
No.
Oh.
No, he was just, an angry citizen. But the old president was a dictator, but also pretty low key, right? Like everyone kind of just went along with it, and there weren't big conflicts with the other countries and everything like this. And so this guy is like, he took over. He wants to weaponize the Starro. And basically anyone who gets in his way is going to go be fodder for Starro. And they present the way that Starro started off very small. And then as he gets more, he shoots off little starfish and he takes their power and he grows in size.
Right.
Anyone that that questions him is going to turn into that. And that's when we get, you know, that big scene of him and Harley. He like takes her out for the day and they have this wonderful lunch and get to know one another. And he says, you know, the people, if I marry you, the people are going to like
she's
me more.
Basically a Vita.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So she's like, the people love what you symbolize and the way that you've got away from your oppression and all.
Wait,
this.
Wait, did Joe just reference a musical?
Well, a musical based on person, I guess. Maybe he's...
Okay, which is more believable, that he knows the musical or that he knows the history?
I mean, the musical's a pretty slim shot for Joe. But...
I mean, you know, it was Madonna in the 90s. I definitely watched it.
Didn't she win an award for that?
She may have been nominated for sure.
There it was. Possibly. I knew she was recognized.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it basically comes down to, this is the moment we said earlier, was he's like, you know, I want you to be my wife and everything. And they have sex and like stuff is caught on fire and stuff. I thought that was really funny. But then I also on the second viewing noticed like, oh, look at those guns they crashed into. Laying around the ground. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But she says, so what are you going to
comment about children?
Yeah. What are you going to do with this weapon? And he's like, well, I'm going to use it to rule by fear. And yeah, she goes, what if someone doesn't like what you're doing? Them and everyone they know and their children are going to be put in there.
And he turns around and she puts a hole in his chest.
Which, again, another one of those pull the rug out from under you. I didn't see that coming.
I do like where she's like, I've learned to detect red flags.
And killing children,
that's
kind of
a big
red flag.
Red flag. Yeah. So we find out that the real mission here is that Peacemaker, the John Cena character, has been tapped with getting this hard drive back to Amanda Waller so they could destroy it. And
they're not there to destroy Starro. No, they're there to cover up any evidence of U.S. involvement.
And you get a pretty good fight sequence between Joel Kinnaman and John Cena. Now, I will say, Joel Kinnaman, not the greatest actor in the world, but he does have a fight sequence. I've said this before. It's at the end of the movie Safe House with Ryan Reynolds that is one of the best knockdown, drag out fist fights you'll ever see.
Wow.
And I like Safe House. I think Safe House
It's
a fun movie.
That's a solid B.
But
movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But
not B level, B like it's a good action movie. Yeah.
That fight sequence between him and Ryan Reynolds is astounding.
Okay.
So when Joel Kinnaman was tasked with this fight, I was like, oh man, this is gonna be good.
That helmet shot's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's the helmet shot.
Mm-hmm. The
Where you could see him fighting in the helmet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry.
Love that so much.
I you know, and that's the thing with Gunn. You're going to get, like, when they, what is it, when they get on the, no. I mean, just when you enter the movie and look at Rooker and it's upside down and he turns the camera, uh-huh. you're going to get these visual flourishes. Like, Gunn, I mean, I think with Guardians 2 especially, all of his stuff has looked really good. But in Guardians 2,
he stepped his game up in Guardians 2.
You got some beautiful shots in Guardians 2. And I saw him experimenting with the camera, doing shots that you don't typically see in the big blockbuster movies. So you get that when we say he's an auteur.
I think this might be the most visually interesting of the DC movies.
Without question.
Yeah, I
can see that.
Easily.
I completely agree. It's bright at times. Everybody's costume pops. Harley... her makeup pop, and her makeup kind of goes, like, starts to, the her skin tone starts to fade a little bit, mm-hmm. and I couldn't tell if that was just, you know, maybe she worked pretty hard that day and the makeup was starting to run a little bit.
Well,
but
you
like,
see,
well, yeah,
like,
I liked that. Well, you know, you see it throughout the movie that the makeup starts to run, it starts to smudge, her lips are smudged throughout.
Well,
the
I think I
movie,
meant
so.
Like her actual skin tone, like, so she has like that pale skin tone, but as the movie progresses, it starts to get a little bit more flesh colored.
I think that makes
sense. Probably just from a hard day's work.
That's what, right. But I was like,
they John McClane'd it.
Reverse John McClane'd it.
Right.
So
maybe it's because she starts to feel loved and
see,
a part of a team.
That is what I was glad that they didn't even, like, that's what I was afraid they were going to do. God. And I was like, oh, don't do that.
Now she's a good guy.
Yeah. Now. And her hair is totally blonde now and not whatever. Yeah.
But that action sequence is phenomenal again. Like, I think with the javelin, they gave Harley a lot to do. And the other thing people are mad about is like, oh, they have Harley Quinn. They just treat her like blah, blah, blah. It's like she's not the main character. They keep comparing, the detractors compare this to Birds of Prey. And it's like, that's the Harley Quinn movie.
Right.
She is in an ensemble team here. And for the part that she gets,
but if
this
struggles at the box office, they'll change the name to
Harley Quinn
and the
Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Which is a comic. Like, it was a comic. She was the... When the first movie came out, they relaunched Suicide Squad with, like, Jim Lee on art and a top name writing the book. Granted, Jim Lee didn't last very long on said comic, but...
Well, yeah, because he can't keep up.
Can't do it.
It was monthly.
Yeah. If it was quarterly, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. But she was, like, the front and center of that team.
So, I mean, there's a whole part in the middle where they go to a bar and they meet the Thinker. I think that bar sequence is really good. You get Mantis in there up on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
But
You get some boob.
You get Floyd Kaufman.
But there's something for the ladies, and there is 8 to 10% of the men. You get
giant wiener.
You get some too.
That hilarious scene with
my buddy Jeff goes, was he wearing pants? No, he was definitely not.
And it's like, if you haven't seen this movie, I don't even want to spoil that part of it, but it's magnificent. That whole pull the rug out of the penis. Well, I mean, it could be. I'm not saying anything against it, but as far as the reveal of the comedic reveal at the end of that sequence is great.
Yeah, but I do like this. So we talked about Lloyd Kaufman. He's in the jail scene in the first Guardians.
Yeah.
And he's here in the bar.
Yeah.
So you also get
your Mantis cameo.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct. So we know that, like, trauma was a big deal for James Gunn.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, shown his mentor some love, which I always appreciate. It's like he didn't, you know.
Forget where he came from.
Right? Like he showed him. This
is a good sequence, and I like that the team, they start to lighten up. They're starting to become a team.
And we know that Flag and Bloodsport mm-hmm. are friends, and they show it here. I do like that scene in the very beginning where they rattle off Idris Elba's qualifications, and then they rattle off John Cena's qualifications, and he was like, he's the same. And he was like, well, he'll
having
do.
A go with me.
Yeah.
Did he say, are you having a laugh?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Right.
You said everyone is qualified for their particular skill. He does the exact same thing I do.
My only complaint there is, like, then they would have put them on different teams.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you would have been like...
You would
divide up those skills.
Because you don't know which team was going to be successful.
Right.
And Team A was caught off guard because they were sold out by
Davidson.
Blackguard.
Yeah. So you're right, though. If you were going to have, like, kind of equal teams.
Right.
But I love that back and forth, though. And that's kind of the Statham and Rock thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were kind of doing the Statham and Rock thing.
Except I didn't think that they were going to make out.
Right.
And this worked, right. But I love that. And they're like, well.
I really want to see a movie where somebody finally does that. And then they
just
kiss.
Start going at it.
They just totally fall in love.
Just owning it.
So that was a really good sequence. And then so in the end, they basically have to they want to take out Starro.
What happens is Starro gets out,
yeah,
and he's destroying Corto Maltese. And the entire time, Idris Elba was like, I'm not a leader, I'm not a leader. And of course, at this moment, he snaps into being a leader. He's directing people where to go. Heart, the rat catcher, like, sends all the rats after Starro, and they cut open Starro's eye, and this is where Harley's like, this is what I was supposed to do.
Well, this is, I mean,
and like comes some, in with the javelin.
I have to bring up that scene too. That I just have to mention the visual of her being inside that eyeball.
Yeah.
With the rats. I'm a huge rat person. Yeah. I used to breed rats. I just love them so, so much. And to see a hero, Sebastian, being, and all these rats going in and killing this giant kaiju, for me, like, I was literally wetting myself in my theater seat over this. I just loved that. And that slow-mo shot of Harley just floating in the eyeball, kind of just like looking dazed and looking around with all these beautifully done CGI rats, like floating towards stuff to eat away. I like literally was in heaven.
And the
cinema
score,
heaven with this thing.
The score is beautiful.
It was gorgeous. It was beautiful.
Every flashback and the most heart from this movie comes from Ratcatcher 2. And when Ratcatcher 2 talks about her father in the past in these flashbacks, you get this gorgeous score that comes back at the end and comes back in the end credits. Taika Waititi plays her dad, which is cool that he got him in there. And it was also a really nice way they depicted the father, because the father was a drug addict.
Right.
And he ends up overdosing. But they also present the father as a loving father. They didn't go, oh, stereotypical, you know, druggy dad that didn't care about his daughter. Like, he presents that just because people are drug addicts doesn't make them necessarily a bad person.
He's got a problem. He still loves his kid.
Yes, and I love that. I think the representation for people that are struggling, because addiction.
I might have a different take on that.
Yeah, I had a, yeah.
What do you mean?
Just because I was married to a junkie. But so.
That doesn't mean they all.
I don't think she loves her kid.
No. Now, that's not what I said. I didn't say it's a one case fits all. What I said is not necessarily. Yeah. I love that, because in movies, drug dealers are
sure, it's shorthand.
The bad guy, right? And so I thought that was really beautiful and touching what he crafted with them.
Sure.
And when she's telling Bloodsport the story on the bus and gets teary-eyed about her father, I thought that was great.
That
and
was then, some of the stuff that I thought you could have gotten rid of.
No, absolutely.
I hear you.
I mean, your opinion, but in my mind, 100% no. I thought that was beautiful. And when she flashes back and you see that scene of them on top of the building and he says, rats are the lowliest of creatures, and if they have a purpose, then do we all.
But everyone has a purpose, right? Isn't it like we all have a purpose? And that's as she's like sending
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If rats are the lowliest of creatures, and if they have a purpose, then so do we all, is beautiful with that score in the background. I thought that was a great moment, and she's the MVP of this movie. I think she's phenomenal. And
100%.
And like Justin said, the imagery with the rats. I mean, Harley Quinn has this javelin, has been searching for the purpose, and Bloodsport says, you go up top, and she goes onto the rooftops. Polka Dot Man, I mean, everyone gets their moment. That's the other thing I was trying to catch on.
Yeah.
Every member of this team, this new team.
Well, that's the advantage of keeping it small, right? Like, when the old team from the first movie, I mean, you had six or seven characters, so you can't give them all a moment.
You didn't have the ability to do that kind of thing.
Exactly. So when
removing Peacemaker, you know, like
they take Flag
out, and then he takes out Flag. So, but you get
when you trim that down, you're able to give every four characters their moment.
So Polka Dot Man, who again another hilarious bit where he always sees his mom because he's traumatized by her. Bloodsport goes, "She's your mom," and he looks up and it's a giant. His mother,
I swear to God, guys, in the theater that moment, the entire audience. Yeah. It was a packed house on the floor dying.
They lost it. Yeah,
it's a good it's a
it
good
was
one.
Insane. It was so amazing to see.
It's a great moment. And Katie, my wife, loved, she thought that was hilarious, like that bit with the she's like, she's awesome. So Polka Dot Man takes out her ankle, and then you see the Starro's like limb is cut off, and then Ratcatcher 2 sends all
King Sharks, he's like, hey, That's grub, or that's food.
Num-num.
And he's like, oh, really? And he runs, and of course, the entire time, King Shark has been trying to eat everything.
Monster num-num?
And he runs off and starts attacking.
And I agree. Sylvester Stallone, perfect casting, right?
I'm going to say this. My alligator mouth is going towards King Shark and not Groot. I'm just going to say that. Way more memorable. Love King Shark. Yeah. I'm so pissed that I have to buy like all of those McFarlane toys just to get King Shark, but I'm going to do it. It's $100. I'm doing it.
King Shark greater than Groot. I agree. I mean, the character Groot I like, but the King Shark is great in this. So, but yeah, and then so Ratcatcher 2 sends all the rats, and then Harley's up on the rooftop. So we finally see the opening. The path is like basically you could have been lit up with arrows pointed at the rooftop. It's going straight at the eye, and she lunges in there with the javelin. The rats come in, like Justin said, start gnawing away at Star's insides, and they defeat it. But what I also like here too is the way James Gunn presents Starro, right? I think that line is touching that Which Starro line? Says at the end before they die.
What does he say?
I was happy floating looking at the stars.
Yeah.
Starro was just an alien floating around in space causing no harm.
That's kind of a nod to, from my interpretation, to the Martian Manhunter.
Okay.
Because the Martian Manhunter, in the comics at least, was brought to Earth on accident. And then he got stuck here because there was nothing left for him to go to.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, we almost had that. Well, we had that character in Justice League.
Yeah.
And now they kind of reference another alien that was just like, I just want to be back out.
But I think that's, again, James Gunn and his...
Totally. Roddy.
Anyone else would just be like, big bad guy, blow up, save the day, right? But James Gunn's like, look, this is a creature that was tortured and experimented on for 30 years. And of course he's mad and wants to break out and this is my city now. But like, they look at all that they went through. And so I love that when he's like, I was happy just doing what I was doing.
Right.
You did this to me. You created a monster.
I also do like that they have to tell you that once the mini stars are on those people's faces, like, that's it. They're not coming back from that.
We're not we're not doing the thing.
We
where
can
you kill
murder
the
all of them, and it won't matter.
They're
like,
walking.
I was like, well done. Yeah. Well, that's pretty.
They say they're corpses.
And that right. That's right out of the schlock level B movies that he was doing at Troma. Like that imagery of them with all the stars on their faces and the giant eyeballs walking around and getting offed. Like that's his pedigree of coming, like being a huge horror guy. That's from his past of being there with those Troma movies, and he's implementing all of the same things here, just with a bigger budget and more know-how. Yeah. And I loved that as being a schlock lover, like, hey man, he's given something for everyone here, and if you love those kinds of straight-to-video crappy Troma horror movies, like, you're gonna love that scene
so
much.
Yeah, I totally
agree.
And
look at his homage when they're doing the experiments when they first go to Starro. And
oh,
the people,
so good.
Their faces are missing, and the stars are, like, have their little mandibles, like, on them. Uh-huh. People's bodies are cut in half. All the experiments, right?
Yeah.
That is so straight out of the Troma book.
Absolutely.
Like, all that gory grossness that's down
Definitely.
There. But, yeah, I mean, and I have to say, too, Bloodsport, who I think is a really cool character in Idris Elba, we've already commended him on his portrayal. But with those guns, Bloodsport has this like tactical outfit, and he has weapons that are like not, they don't look like weapons, but they're all over his body. He takes them off like seamlessly when he's in the middle of a fight and uses them to whatever advantage, tactical advantage he needs. So he can just pull off guns. He can then attach them together and make huge guns that he shoots Starro with. You know, he can throw things. I thought his arsenal and the imaginative, like the creativity of that, the way that he visualized that was phenomenal.
I don't know why that thing spun. But
it's cool, right?
Yeah, that's why it's spun.
He pulled off. He has flamethrowers.
Yeah,
he has
it's for the toy. It's for the toy.
That's exactly
kids
right.
Have a toy,
you're
right?
Totally
it's
right.
It's rated R, but they still got to make toys.
You're totally right.
And we have to mention right before, was it before they beat Starro though, the showdown with Peacemaker?
Yeah,
he comes crashing. The building has been.
I thought
destroyed.
That was the most comic booky thing in the best possible
way.
Yeah,
the charges go off. He's falling down three levels of the building. I thought he was going to land on Peacemaker, like knowing Gunn's sensibilities and everything. So,
but they kind of already did that gag.
Yeah.
When they take out Polka Dot Man.
That's true. Polka Dot Man.
I mean,
bites
they
it.
Had just done it like 3 minutes.
I had to ask in terms of that visual, have we ever seen that in a movie before? Because when I was watching that, I was like, man, this is really original with him going down every charge
level by level.
I don't think I've seen it before.
I think it does exist. And I can't, I like my.
All right.
Maybe. I could
don't
be,
think
I
that
could
exact
be wrong,
visual,
but like, I keep thinking of like shooting in a circle. Like shooting the floor out from underneath somebody and dropping down and then dropping down.
It sounds familiar, but I don't think we've seen it like this, and I really liked it how he superhero landed on it and then that momentum kept going.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought he was gonna crush Peacemaker, he doesn't, but Peacemaker has Ratcatcher 2 dead to rights. He's already killed Flag and she knows too much and he's just basically like, I'm sorry, kid. And they have this standoff. And earlier Peacemaker, you know, goes on about, you know, who the dick measuring contest.
Yeah, right.
I can shoot better. I can shoot more dead center than you. How do you do that? Smaller bullets, which was hilarious. And then they go face off and there's a slow motion, them each shooting at the same time. And
Idris Elba
Bloodsport's bullet is
a smaller bullet.
Rips through the middle of Peacemaker's and shoots him in the throat. And he's bleeding out. And I just thought that was a really cool looking
scene. No, I thought it was a very good looking scene.
Yeah.
The only thing that I will say is, we know the Justice League exists in this world because Superman is referenced The reason Bloodspot or Bloodsport is in jail is because he put Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet.
Straight out of the comics.
Straight out of the comics.
All the you know, detractors online were so mad about that. It's like, this is from...
That's in an issue.
It is in an issue.
I posted it on Facebook. I'm like, this is the...
See, I didn't care that it was from a comic. I still didn't like it and thought it was stupid, but that's me.
But I mean, like...
But he's still pulling it from the canon.
Course.
You know what I mean?
Course.
Like, I mean, yeah, it may be stupid, but they have a problem with, like, they're just like, oh, you're ruining blah blah blah. It's like, but wait a minute, this isn't the history, it's
the same argument of Superman snapping Zod's neck, right? Like, I'm not a huge fan of that, but it's in the books. He kills the three Kryptonians in the John Byrne Superman stuff. Starro is destroying this, you know, there's a giant starfish that is attacking this town, and Superman doesn't show up, or no
is
other
he still in the ICU or no?
I mean, Bloodsport's in jail at this point. Like, the reason he's in... No,
we don't know for how long.
How long
I guess that's
recover?
True.
We don't know if he just got in jail.
So we know Superman exists, right? So we know that Wonder Woman exists. We know that's...
This is the problem with every superhero movie. Why didn't 8,000...
Totally right.
Why
You're
didn't
totally
8,000
right.
other superheroes come to... I mean, guess what? Maybe he's against Lex Luthor. Maybe Wonder Woman's fighting... You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, maybe he's taking a nap.
Yeah,
maybe. There's also a Green Lantern.
So, I mean,
what's the time zone difference?
Yeah.
We don't know.
But we could use that argument in every
And that was apparently that was the pitch that James Gunn originally threw out there. Is that the Suicide Squad was going to be hunting Superman in this version, which they are now doing in the video game.
Interesting. Oh yeah, yeah. That does look cool. So anyway, basically, so that Amanda Waller doesn't kill them all, Bloodsport uploads the data from the hard drive, and he says, "This is what we've got. You either let us all walk free, or this makes its way to the press." The American involvement in the Starro stuff. And so, and I love that where she goes, see, I told you I'd make you a leader.
Right.
Agreed. And then just signs off. They all get away.
Weasel's still alive. I do love the scene.
That was hilarious.
Of course.
I was so upset we didn't get more of him in the movie. I swear to God. I know. Because I only saw the first trailer one time. I was like, dude, are we going to get this character throughout the whole movie? Then no.
But what we
did. Did you guys see that someone picked out that you could see his genitals in the movie? I didn't see his balls. I didn't see any genitals there.
But you got to admit, though, what we got of Weasel was pretty great. Like,
it was just enough.
The whole thing. What is that thing? Is it
a
dog?
It's a werewolf.
But the dog thing. Davidson, is that a dog? What kind of dog do you think that is?
I don't know all the breeds.
I don't know all the breeds. Is that a werewolf? Harley. I love werewolves. Like, I love it that Rick Flagg is looking at these
I've always wanted
idiots.
To meet a werewolf. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love
He's
that
looking
scene
at
so
these
much.
Idiots. Like, it's so funny. And then at the end, I think it's great that he just, you've
Pops
long
back
forgotten
up.
About Weasel. Right. And then the immediate pre-credit scene is him coughing up water, and then the way that Sean Gunn, who does the motion capture,
runs away
with his hands
flailing away.
It's so funny. I thought that was great. I thought his head was gonna explode because he wasn't part of the deal.
Sure.
But they keep him alive, and then we go to post-credit scenes,
which is just, I mean, there's only one.
Post-credit scene.
Yeah, they reveal that Peacemaker is alive, and we don't even know what's gonna happen. You know, we know there's an HBO series coming. We don't know what that's going to look like.
But
he's
going
to team up with The Question, and he's going to team up with Blue Beetle and Nightshade and Captain Atom, and they're going to have their own little team.
But they say, like, why do we need to keep this a-hole alive who basically just tried to kill, like, stop them from saving the world? And they're like, oh, only to save the world. So there's some kind of huge threat.
Something,
going on.
Yeah. There's always going to be a threat.
I thought this was a blast.
I think this is... I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. There are some things that I wasn't a huge fan of, but if this is the tonal shift that we're trying to do with DC, I am on board.
I think this is Guardians.
If we are getting away from the Chris Nolan and the Zack Snyder, I am on board with this. They've already kind of done that with Shazam.
Shazam and Aquaman fit
both
in this
had its
universe.
Own tone. I would agree with that.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like these are bad guys, so they're doing crazier, more villainous stuff, but the tone of it overall would feel like it lives in the same universe.
Yeah.
Just like how Marvel, the films are different, but they feel like, oh, this is cohesive. These are all MCU movies.
Yes.
This fits right in there with the stuff that's already got sequels. Shazam 2, Aquaman 2. Suicide Squad, like, this can continue and grow their brand.
Yeah, hopefully we are going to find new life. We don't, you know, there's the J.J. Abrams, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Superman. We don't know what that is
yet. Flash is the next big one.
Flash is the next one.
Really exciting. I know Justin's excited with Michael
Keaton. You're looking at my eyeballs right
now.
I'm like, ooh.
I mean, that Flash movie is really, I mean... That could make or break. Like, it could be great.
It will make or break. Like that, it's going to go one of
two. Listen, as long as I see one scene Which I know I'm going to get more than one scene.
Maybe.
Of Keaton in the suit fighting. Yeah. No, I know for sure. He's definitely, I know. Believe me.
I think we'll see him in the suit. For how many times we see him in
fighting,
that suit.
Fighting, though? Yes, also.
Well, yeah. The suit's on the yes. teaser. They teased his emblem.
Yeah, he's
the
fighting. There's a whole action sequence. I'm yeah. not going to okay. spoil it.
I'm so
you know.
Excited.
But no, as long as I get that, I'm like, I don't care about the rest of the movie. I'm yeah. just being straight up with you. I don't care.
There you go.
But I do want to comment yeah. what you guys were saying in terms of like the juxtaposition or the shift within DC. I think people are forgetting that, you know, they took a chance already on a filmmaker with the Joker movie and showed that they are willing to let a filmmaker portray a true vision, regardless of what it is, whether it's daring or not. And that succeeded as well. And I think this is just following in step with that and showing that they're willing to let filmmakers do their own thing. We know that the first Suicide Squad movie was beholden to studio, shenanigans, if you will, and got a mediocre movie because of it. And finally, they're just like, here, they gave a talented filmmaker a project and said, do whatever you want with this. And I think we as viewers and fans benefited from that so much. So I have to applaud DC finally. And whether you liked Snyder's cut of Justice League or not, that's another indication that they're finally like, hey, we just got to take a step back and let these people make these movies with these characters, regardless if we think of it the same way. And we've benefited. So I'm super excited about that. I'm just, as a fan, as a movie viewer, I'm just super happy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I agree. I think as long as they have somebody to maybe rein some people in that need to be reined in without damaging.
Or you hire people that don't need to be reined in.
I think everybody needs to be reined in.
Well, James Gunn, I mean, look at him as a filmmaker. He would seem like the type that would need to be, but they didn't. And I think the film benefits from that. I would agree with
James Gunn. I would agree. You were absolutely right.
But you don't rein in Scorsese. You don't rein in Spielberg.
You should have with The Irishman.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that
I didn't say I didn't like it. It didn't need to be 4 hours long.
But you might, they like 100% of the movie.
Chop it in half.
It may not be perfect, but you get more hits than misses. So maybe that's your compromise.
Yeah.
Let them do what they want and get more of a, you know, more of a thing than a chopped up Frankenstein's monster.
I think you got a better shot of getting a good movie out of trusting a filmmaker who's already made good movies than you are out of trusting a room full of suits don't read this stuff.
Yep.
That don't care about this stuff.
When it comes to the comics, I think you're 100% right. You have to trust the people that love the source material because they're looking at things on a financial level.
And I mean, they need to look at it as these comic books are basically like,
It's your blueprint.
It's your test market.
Yeah.
These issues have been out. You've already known whether or not people reacted positively or negatively to these stories. You've already done your test market on this stuff. You already have your answers. Why are you questioning them?
Right. You can't. Yeah. They can't get out of their own way.
Yeah. They really can't. So. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joey. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And Justin, where can everybody find you?
We are at Epic Film Guys everywhere on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to check out our show, epicfilmguys.com.
Awesome. And I'm Tom, and you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. I guess next week is what, Free Guy?
Free Guy.
And so that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Major General Warden exonerates the survivors.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's gonna ruin the plot.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.